This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. I am so thrilled I have in the studio with me today a woman who I admire so much, not just for her writing, but because she is a warrior. She tried to fight the establishment, and unfortunately, she lost, but out of it came something absolutely wonderful. Bonsu Brandvik is here in the studio with me. Hi, Bonsu.
Hi. Thank you for having me on today.
Well, you know, I always love a good story. And when I heard about, you know, when I moved first to Florida and I visited the Bellevue Biltmore Hotel, I thought, my goodness, this is so gorgeous. And I was so thrilled to just be there. And, of course, they decided to tear it down. Developers came along, and it went to the chopping block. And I know you tried to fight it very hard.
I was one of hundreds who tried. But, yes, I tried very hard to save it because in America we haven't yet developed an appreciation for historic buildings. For us, it's still, you know, we're still a kind of a shiny new country, and we like things that are shiny and new. And unfortunately, yes, we are losing a lot of our historic
buildings. We are losing
buildings.
Too many. And we were so fortunate that the Don Cesar Hotel, which is our beautiful pink hotel here in the Clearwater, St. Petersburg area, was preserved. Although, they were within hours of...
Yeah.
Yes,
they were.
With big
ball
to knock it down.
It was already on the chopping block.
I mean,
it was on the schedule for the demolition
crew. It was crazy, and it's such a beautiful place, and it's just a landmark here.
And I think we might have had a chance to save the Bellevue Biltmore, but unfortunately, the timing, they had closed it for renovation, and they had gutted it, so they couldn't operate it as a hotel. And just as that happened, we had, of course, the economic fallout with the real estate crash
here in Florida,
and so it was just
so we're going to be talking to Bonsu about what she did. She decided to preserve the memories, and through writing books and also through taking photographs. I just want to remind everyone that at the bottom of the hour I'm going to be talking to Dr. Dana Cohen and Gina Bria, and they're going to be talking about this book, and I'm sure, Bonsu, you'll be interested in it too. It's called Quench, and it's Beat Fatigue, Drop Weight, and Heal Your Body Through the New Science of Optimum Hydration, which is a good subject that we all, you know, I think we all have a bit of fatigue, right?
Absolutely.
So we can look forward to talking to them at the bottom of the hour. But back to your story. You know, Bonsu, not only did she try to preserve the hotel. When that didn't work, she went in and she went through, like, I think every corner of that hotel taking photographs so that she could just keep a photographic memory book on her website, which she shares with people. And I think this is such a beautiful thing you've done.
And I also took pictures of the demolition, every couple of weeks of the demolition, because that was an important part too. They did save when we're talking about an enormous structure, it was 820,000 square feet.
Wow.
That's just an incredible, and that does not count. They had a full basement with various rooms that had been formerly they had a little pub down there. They had what had been the dress shop, you know, where they would make the fancy ball gowns, and you know, and they had a labyrinth of tunnels throughout the entire structure that made it possible for workers to carry goods up to the floors where they were needed. So they saved out of that 820,000 square feet and the basement, they wound up saving a surface area only of 36,000 square feet. And of that they saved, they've gutted that, and they are going to make it into a modern inn on the property. They moved it which was an impressive move, by the way, to move a 36,000 square foot building about two football fields lengths away, and they will be making that into an inn. Unfortunately, they're not going to preserve the inside design of the Victorian era.
Well, when it opened, this hotel was, well, I mean, it was impressive when I saw it, and of course, when it opened, and it was built by who started?
Henry B. Plant. And Henry B. Plant is one of the two Henrys that opened up Florida. You've got Henry Flagler and Henry Plant. Both of them came to Florida, by the way, because both of their wives suffered from tuberculosis. And they realized that by bringing them south with the damp, warm air of the winter, they could extend their lives sometimes by decades. So that's what brought the two Henrys, who were both transportation magnets, to the area.
But railroad guys, yes, big railroad guys.
Huge railroad, shipping. Flagler was into oil as well, and Henry Plant was more into just shipping and moving items from one place to another in whatever format.
So when he built the hotel, he built a railroad link right to the door,
yes,
practically
did.
The door of the hotel.
Yes, that was the rule, that progress followed the railroad. Population followed the railroad. Everything followed the railroad. So he built the railroad right to the doors of his hotel, and people got off there at the Bellevue Biltmore and would spend the winter in Florida at that time. People used to winter at various locations.
That was opened in what year?
In January of 1897.
1897.
Yes.
So it lasted over 100 years, which is great.
It lasted 118 years.
And that must have been quite an opening.
Oh, it was an amazing opening in 1897. Oh, yes. And people that wintered there, I mean, you had like Thomas Edison and Henry Ford. And then over the years, it saw four presidents of the United States stayed there, as well as Margaret Thatcher and the Duke of Windsor. It just drew, you know, the names of all, you name the Hollywood star back then, and they had stayed at the Bellevue Biltmore.
Now, of course, this hotel has a reputation, and this has been for a long time, of having some ghosts in it. And
yes.
So this, I think, is one of the things that sort of tweaked your interest in writing
well, actually,
stories.
I wanted to tell the history of the hotel. And I thought, what better way to do it than to take people back in time and let them relive a little slice of the history at the hotel as it would have been seen through the eyes of the people living at that time. So when I started writing the series, it was just to tell the history of the hotel. But shortly after I put out that I was writing a series called The Spirits of the Bellevue Biltmore, people started writing to me, telling me or asking if I was going to include the phenomenon or the spirit that they saw while they were staying at the hotel. And soon afterward, I noticed that several of those stories were very similar, and I started comparing them. And now, actually, one of the presentations that I offer to groups is called The 20 Real Ghosts of the Bellevue Biltmore. Minor fiction, but I am convinced at this point that the place really is. I had never been a huge ghost believer, but I've become one, actually.
Well, it's funny. When my boys were young, I took them to hotels that had a reputation for having ghosts, for example, to Jekyll Island, which is another place where, whoo, again, all the big and rich people built there so that they could get away from the cold of New York. And I love those stories. So
yeah.
You have done a beautiful job, starting with your first book is called Pearls. The next one is Ripples, and the new one is Redemption. But tell us the eras that they cover.
Well, the first one in Pearls covers the each time, and by the way, how I get them to it is every time a woman checks into the hotel, her problems or that she has resonate with a group of spirits. And because each woman is different, her problems are different, they resonate with different spirits.
So they're modern stories or today's stories about people who came to the hotel when it was open up until recently. And then they had some interesting experiences.
Yes, as they fall asleep, the spirits will take them back in time. And in Pearls, the woman who checks in there is Honor Macklin, and she is taken back in time to the Victorian era. Liliana Thorne in Ripples is taken back to the era of Prohibition, when we ran illegal liquor in and out on those railroads. And then the third book Redemption. I have Summer Time, and Summer checks in, and she's taken back to the World War II era when 3,000 soldiers occupied the hotel.
This is a fascinating period. Most people don't understand that when World War II was going on, the government confiscated or asked or requested.
Requisitioned was the word.
Requisitioned for including the
Dancezar
was for, I think the Air Force took that one. And who took the?
The Army Air Corps.
Army Air Corps.
Took the Bellevue Biltmore. And that's where they kept the pilots that were training at MacDill Airfield and Drew Airfield. MacDill Airfield, of course, became MacDill Air Force Base after the war. And Drew Airfield became Tampa International Airport. But during the war, those were used to train pilots because we were losing, people don't realize, we were losing hundreds of pilots every single day during World War II.
It's quite incredible. And, of course, here in Florida, it was a good area for them to come. Yes. They don't want to train pilots so much up north, and so they got it done here.
We trained on the B-26, which was called the Marauder. It was a bomber, and we trained pilots to fly that. And it had a lot of not very good names, the Marauder. It was like the Flying Coffin, you know, things like that. But because it was a great bomber in the air, it would take a lot of flak or a lot of enemy hits without going down. So it was very safe in the air. But taking off and landing was so tricky that we had a saying here, one a day in Tampa Bay. Because at one point they actually, for a full month, they lost an airplane, at least one, every single day into the bay.
Wow.
So we still have some aircraft down at the bottom of Tampa Bay.
And then the fun part of doing this book is that you got to talk to people, and you met with people who had actually
lived through
that, and some of the pilots who had trained here.
Yes, and it was very interesting to learn firsthand perspectives of what it was like. I mean, Clearwater was still a sleepy little vacation town in the 40s. So all of a sudden, all the local boys left to join the military to fight the war. And suddenly we have an influx of not only the 3,000 soldiers at the Bellevue Biltmore, but they also filled hotels like the Fenway in Dunedin. They filled other hotels, the Clearwater Hotel in Clearwater, you know, downtown Clearwater. They filled up all those hotels with soldiers as well. So you can imagine the changes that occurred in this area during that time.
And you bring that to life in this book.
Yes,
let's talk about how the book starts and who your character.
In this one, as I said, each time somebody checks in, they've got different problems. And this time, the heroine, Summertime, and by the way, she has a twin brother named Justin. So Justin Time and Summertime.
Okay.
And parents
who are very cutesy. I love that. I've known some parents who have done that. they love to do it.
Well, Summer and her brother have eidetic memories. So they it's like photographic memories, but even better. And so they were misused by foster parents throughout their childhood, and they became con artists because that was their way to survive, and that's the way they were making their living. They had had a falling out, and so Summer had gone off with her team doing cons one direction, and Justin had gone another. But this story starts off with the idea that Justin is in trouble with the mob, and in order to get to save his life, Summer must participate in a theft, and it's at the Bellevue Biltmore. It's going to take place. It's an art theft when they're having a very fancy art show there, an art auction. And she has to take part in that. And part of their plan is to set fire to the hotel as a distraction. So Summer is confronted. She doesn't want to do this, but of course she has to save her brother. And so things evolve from there.
Uh-huh. Oh, and everybody's in for an exciting story, as always, with your books. Because I love the way that you introduce this element of paranormal and take us back in time, because I love books that take us back in time, and you always manage to make us, you I think between your research and your great imagination, you have a feel for these eras.
Well, and it's always a matter of how do I tie the present to the past. And for instance, in Pearls, there's a pearl necklace, And the individual pearls were given to females, and it showed how the pearls tied the generations together. In ripples, it was the idea that your actions, one ripple would cause ripples that would cause other actions to happen, and those ripples through time actually tied the generations together. And now with redemption, it's a matter of making mistakes and finding that how do I earn redemption for those mistakes, and what happens if you don't earn redemption before you die?
So it's just, isn't it wonderful to be a writer, to be able to create?
Yes.
And as you're talking, I can see, I'm looking at Bansu, and as she's talking about her characters, to her, they're not characters.
They're really people. Do come to life,
She knows them. And it makes, and it comes through in the writing.
I'm proud of them. I'm proud of each of my women. They grow a lot during the process. And of course, there is love involved, because love is always involved in any good story, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But it's how they grow and how they change, and how they learn the lessons from the past that are still relevant today. And I think that's one of the things that I'm always most awestruck by, is the idea that what people went through, we're still going through it today. And it's like, if just one generation would learn the lessons from the past, and you know, how much easier life would be today.
It would. And it's just so wonderful to see a writer who's so enthusiastic about her writing, about her stories, and about her characters. And I know also that you are just so helpful to other writers. And this is something that I admire so much about you, because I have to tell everyone that Bansu has probably, it is the best meetup group to for authors to get together and to work together and to learn.
Yeah, it's Clearwater Writers Meetup, and it's a critique group designed. But I do have worked very hard. I've had that group almost 9 years now, and so I've actually had the pleasure of watching authors come in having no idea how to put a book together and actually succeeding in you know, getting to the point of the end and publishing their books. I also have writers who, you know, have published, you know, 20 or 30 books, you know. So the idea is, it doesn't matter how much experience you have or don't have, we make a place for you, and, you know, we move the critiques down to whatever level you're writing. For instance, if your first book, we're not going to critique you for not having a period in the right place, you know, that kind of thing. We'll give you more story formulation ideas. Those who published their first book will help give you some ideas for free marketing and things like that.
Because it is an important process. Writing, everybody who writes a book, they write a book, but then you need that next level. You need the critique group. You need people to read your book who are not your immediate family members.
As I always said, is your immediate family will love your book as they love you. And they're just going to be amazed with any little words you put down. But kind of like, think of your child's first performance on stage. Not your child. Your child was amazing. but most people can picture their first child's performance of playing a violin and on stage with a, you know, elementary school group. And you just hold your breath the whole time, you know, they're trying to learn that.
Yeah.
And so that's with writing, it's that same level of fragility, because people, when they start writing, they're so insecure that you don't want to smash that. At the same time, you don't want to be like those parents and cheer them on and, yes, you were the best one, you know, in the group, because that doesn't help them either. They have to understand that, no, you really do have to obey the laws of grammar and logical flow in a story and things like that. They have, but you can learn those things one thread at a time. You don't have to, you know, throw the whole blanket over the person.
Yeah. and that's a wonderful thing about your group. I think it's just marvelous. Now, I wanted to mention, too, before we go to commercial, I noticed the dedication. That you dedicated this to your husband.
Yes, he's my hero, my rock. Yeah.
And I wanted to say, I you know, for those of us who are so blessed, as you said in there, he's calm. Yes. He manages to stay calm. And so when I read that dedication, I thought, yeah, that's my husband. Isn't it wonderful to have a husband who can stay calm when we tend to get a little...
This book release is a perfect example of that, because where I was freaking out, because I had meant to release this in December. So it was a six-month delay on this. And partly because, as you know, I help care for my mother who has Alzheimer's, and I had to put those priorities first, and things slowed down. But he's just like, it'll get finished. Don't worry about it, you know. And he says, think of it as you're whetting their appetite, you know. And you know, he has all that take. And then when the book actually did release, the first day of the release, the cover was had a misprint on the cover. So I was freaking out with it. And I had my whole shipment of books was on the way, you know, to begin the book signing tours and all that. And so I was completely frazzled. I canceled that order, and then they were supposed to be getting the replacement order in, and they corrected the error. So meanwhile, then I put out to anybody who had bought the book on the first day that I'll replace the book with a signed autographed copy. Just send me a picture of the misprint on the cover. And he's just sort of like...
But he's calm.
Yeah.
Like my husband, the same way. I get crazy about, like, somebody will cancel on me, you know, like just before I'm leaving the house, and I'll get a call and say, I can't make it. And, you know, I get all crazy. And my husband just... You'll be fine. He said, you can just talk for the whole hour yourself. You don't really need anyone.
It's just going to be fine. Yeah. No problem. Just talk about some of your favorite things. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, my husband was just like, it's just the misprint on the cover. He says, just think if it was a misprint inside the book. He says, they can still enjoy the book, and you're going to replace it for free with an autographed copy. They actually get a bonus book. And, you know, he says, you know,
and actually, probably the ones that were misprinted will be come with the collector's item. And 20 years from now, they'll be on eBay selling for $100.
Yep,
because that's what happens when you have a book that has sometimes... It's really strange that this happens. And one of the things that's happened to me when I first started this program, you know, I get hardback books well in advance of everybody before they're released. And so I was getting these hardback books, and I was at that point, I didn't know, you know, anything about the business. And so sometimes I was giving them away, and I didn't realize that publishers sometimes don't, even for famous people, don't publish a big run.
Right, right.
And so I actually found out later on that I gave away a book that, because the publisher wasn't sure, it hadn't done a big run, that first edition, in less than a year, became worth $125.
You had given it away?
And I gave it away because it sort of didn't correlate with me that I've got the really first editions. Mm-hmm. I mean, that ones that hot off the press kind of thing.
Yeah.
And sometimes they do have mistakes, and I've seen that too.
Yes. Yeah. And that's actually how it came to be, was that when I get your proof. And at this point, now realize that not only has my critique group all reviewed every single chapter, I then had a local editor do it, and then I have a best-selling author who is my key editor, had her review it, and then I reviewed it myself again, get the proof out, and then I hand it out to, I always buy four proofs, and I hand them out to the key people, and it's like, sit down, read this, you've got 2 days, read it, find any mistakes. And I found 50 mistakes. Well, between me and my team, we found 50 mistakes. And so I got those corrected and uploaded those so that the first book out would be, you know, the error-free. Ha ha. And then I got the one back from my mother. And my mother has always critiqued my books in the past. And now, of course, with the short-term memory issues, I had just given her one more just out of love and courtesy. And darned if she didn't give it back to me, and she found a mistake that I didn't catch.
Well, she's a great reader. She's always been a great reader.
She is an excellent reader. And but she found, so I have at some point in the book, I said the still crowed room instead of the still crowded room. And that's in the book. And it's just, I always think it just mocks me, you know.
Yeah, well, it happens to everybody, even the ones published by the top New York publishers, and they go through so many hands, and they'll have mistakes. And now I've discovered that first editions with mistakes can be valuable. So,
yeah, you never know.
So
yeah. So I've gotten to where I accept a flaw here and there a lot more than I would have before, because it's one of those things that sometimes it's interesting that the processes that we all use, whether you're using a program to catch errors or whether Word automatically corrects.
Okay, that's something I want to talk about when we come back. I have to take a commercial break. We're going to come back, and I want to talk exactly about that subject.
All right.
Okay, we'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
MyPillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I, or call 1-800-871-1543. That's 800-871-1543.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I am back with my guest in the studio, Bonsu Brandvik, and we are talking about her new book, Redemption, the third in a series of what's going to be four books, right, Bonsu?
Yeah, it'll be a four-part series. Yes.
Four-part series, and this third book takes, as all of her books do, takes place at the beautiful Bellevue Biltmore Hotel, which they knocked down, and I cry about it every time I think about it. Yeah. And the new book is called Redemption, and the era that it takes part in is World War II.
Yeah, all of my books take place in two time frames. So this one,
modern and
was in 2009, just before the hotel closed, is the present, and the past is World War II era.
And the next book is going to cover, I think, the tearing down of the hotel. I can't get into some of this because I get so angry. I would love to know where these people who are architects go to school. Because, for example, the Veterans Hospital in St. Petersburg, which is, again, marvelous buildings, mm-hmm. and some horrible building they built next to it should... Yeah. It's disgusting. Yeah. I could do a whole program about that.
Well, what I get is, I say I get to get my vengeance in the next book. The next book I begin writing is Nails. And Nails will cover the period of time when the original section of the hotel was being built and the demolition in the present.
In the present.
And because I can't have somebody check into the hotel, in that one, my protagonist in the present is going to be a homeless woman who is working on the demolition crew, and unbeknownst to her supervisors, she's sleeping. She's made her little nest in the basement of the Bellevue Biltmore.
Wow, that's going to be something. Yeah. And so, everybody, you can get Bonsu's books wherever books are sold, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and The Redemption is the most recent one, but all three are just fantastic, and I hope that everyone will go there, and then they should go to your website.
Absolutely.
Because they can see actual photos that you took and preserved
Hotel. On my website and on my Facebook page, both, and just look for Bonsu Brandvik on...
Yeah, there aren't many Bonsus in the world.
Yeah. I have found that's really turned out to be an unintended marketing tool, is that if you can remember the name Bonsu, you're either going to turn up with me or African drum music.
So, you know, it's perfect, really. Yeah. It's like Patsy with a Z. Yeah, I mean, where are you going to get P-A-T-Z-I? Yeah. That's it. You know, it makes it really easy for searching.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And all of my books are available, by the way, in paperback,
and
ebook, and audio. Redemption's audio will be available the first week of August.
Yeah, I was just listening to Ripples in Audible. I've developed a real taste for Audible books.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I find that, one thing, as a writer, I feel guilty if I'm sitting there reading a book when I should be writing. But there are so many things, whether you're driving, cooking, doing laundry, where you can't be expected to be writing. So that is my reading time.
With Audible
and,
books.
Yeah, with Audible books.
Exactly. It's wonderful. And, okay, I've got a call in from New York coming, and we're going to be talking to about this new book called Quench. And I think you'll find it interesting, Bonsu.
Right.
And I think it's coming just at a time when everybody in the world seems to be fatigued. Things wear us out. We stay up late watching television from Singapore and gosh knows where. So we are all exhausted, and there's so much going on in the world I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah, people don't realize how important hydration is in that process of everything.
It is. And so I was really thrilled when they sent me and this is an Audible book. June is Audible book month. Audiobook month, I guess.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it is. And lots of promotions are going out there for Audible books. And I think it's just such a great opportunity to, when you are busy, and exactly that, when you're doing the laundry, I usually listen when I'm doing the laundry and doing the dishes. So that's my, other than that, you know, I really enjoy it. And also, when you go to the beach, if you don't want to take a book and get it ruined down there, and we're here at the beach.
And actually, on an airplane a lot of times, because, you know, people can be distracting. And when you're...
And it can keep you calm.
Yeah, you just put your headphones
especially
on.
Especially when they just lock the door and you're there and the plane doesn't move. Like happened recently when I went up to Yale. I'm like, okay, you lock the doors. Move the plane.
That's
why we got on the airplane, to move.
That's right. Recently, flew my granddaughter, my 5-year-old granddaughter Aubrey, was visiting with us, and which is a true joy, you know, for me. It's my only grandchild, and I flew her back to Seattle, and that's what we did. We sat on the ground for a half an hour before we moved, and that's really hard when you've got a 5-year-old who's like, I thought we were going to fly.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it is actually, that is probably one of the, they should give Audible books to everybody on a flight.
That's what would be good.
You know, really, you don't want to watch those horrible movies on the little screen anyway. But that they used to do, and it's sort of annoying. But if everybody gets some Audible books, stay calm.
That'd be it.
And and also. I love Audible books. I love particularly nonfiction books in Audible because, I can learn something.
It allows you to be a lot more patient with people who are on the plane with a crying infant and, you know, all that kind of stuff, too.
Exactly.
I always have empathy for them, but it doesn't make the crying any easier to bear just because you're being empathetic to the parent.
That's true. But this book is fascinating, and as I said, because it's Audible Book Month, they sent me the Audible, and I really enjoy this. Okay, I think I have on the phone Dr. Dana Cohen, right?
Yes.
And Gina Bria,
good
are
morning.
You there?
Yes.
Okay.
Hello. So pleased to speak to you.
Well, I am thrilled to talk to you. You know, the name of the book is Quench, Beat Fatigue, Drop Weight, and Heal Your Body Through the New Science of Optimum Hydration. Whoa, I love this book. I love this book, and what an idea. Now, I've always been a great proponent of drinking a lot of water. So I didn't know all of this other stuff. So you have to tell us about water, things that we didn't know about. And I will mention, I wanted to mention particularly that, Gina, you are a cultural anthropologist. And so I didn't expect that you would be involved in water. But tell us about this book.
Oh, I'm so pleased you've asked. It's such a strange journey. I was looking at desert communities and how they survive drought and without 8 glasses of water a day. And I was so surprised to find out that they got their water from plants, from cactuses and from roots and tubers and seeds and fruits and vegetables, of course. And that was a big surprise. And then the next part of the story that matters so much to me is while I was doing this research, my elderly mom was in a nursing home suffering from chronic dehydration. So here I was researching these desert communities. At the same time, my mom was in this nursing home suffering dehydration. And I knew there was some kind of connection that we could get to. There was some kind of solution that was being locked, that was in this story, a mystery somehow. And eventually, I decided to send her some chia seeds. I had ground up a package of them to make them more easy to mix, and I sent them to her staff at the nursing home and asked them, just throw in a teaspoon or a tablespoon in her morning orange juice, and let's see what happens. And indeed, it got her out of that chain of chronic dehydration. And it's so simple what we're proposing. It's so doable. We just want to share with your listeners, please get a lot of fresh fruit and vegetables in your life. It's going to change the way you hydrate. You're going to feel better. You're going to function better at every level, whether you're young, youth, athlete, or whether you're an elderly person.
Well, you know, it's funny. When I read this book, I realized that I instinctively knew about this before, because I lived in a place in a desert area, and we did not have, and I mean, now at home I have bottles of water all the time, but I lived in a place where we didn't have bottles of water, and water was, we had to bring it actually in. But we did have watermelon, and we had tomatoes, and we had all sorts of fruits and vegetables from the local market. And we lived on those. And so now I can relate to what you're saying in this book.
Yeah, it's so interesting. This is Dr. Dana. A lot of this is instinctual. But there's now this all this new science that's really backing it up. And it's so fascinating. I often use this example. You know, we've always known that we have to move our joints to lubricate them. We've always been told that you got to move to lubricate your joints. Now, because of all the new research that's being done and shown about fascia, which is that connective tissue that envelopes all of our cells and all of our organs, that fascia acts as a hydraulic pump in our body. It literally moves water. So the idea of moving our joints, even though that's instinctual, now we really understand why. It's fascinating.
Now, tell us about water gel. What does that mean?
So gel water is a newly discovered phase of water, which is also one of the mind-blowing things that we're talking about in the book. We know that water exists as liquid, ice, and vapor, which is simple H2O, and now we're finding out that there is another phase of water, and we call it mostly gel throughout the water, but it's also known as structured water or ordered water, and this water holds an electrical charge, so it actually gives our cells better energy than plain or bulk water, H2O. And it happens to be the type of water that's mostly in our cells, but it's also the type of water that's found in plants, vegetables, and fruits.
Now, you came out with a 5-day program to sort of shock yourself into hydration.
Well, we wanted to help people find out what it felt like to really be optimally hydrated, because we know most people are functioning, but functioning at a low-grade dehydration. The difference between being fully hydrated and the buoyancy, forgive the pun, that it brings into your life, the fluidity, your capacity in your muscles and your brain, we want people to experience this. So we laid out a 5-day plan, very, very simple. You can eat whatever you want in the plan, but the hydration points in the day and the things you hydrate with become connected to this new science. And that allows you to be at the end of 5 days to really experience, wow, the difference between where I was and what I feel now. And then we had to craft a very gentle plan because we were thinking of a range of people who would use it, and a plan that would include anybody's eating patterns. It's a lot of thought, a lot of work, but we're very happy because it's so easy and it's actually kind of fun. We include movement, but really sweet little movements, simple things like dropping your chin to your chest, which you can do while you're sitting in the car waiting for the light to change. So we did a way to really get you to this new experience, and then you're going to want to pick up on that in your own life and figure out how to keep yourself in great hydration, optimal hydration.
Now, does it make a difference how you get these foods into you? I know you do have recipes in there for mixes and
you know. Yeah, smoothies and infused waters. It doesn't. We like smoothies because they're so concentrated. You're getting tons of vegetables and fruits in a very concentrated form, and you're adding liquid to it. So smoothies are a great way to get hydration into you. We also give you some, which I love, some popsicle recipes, which are fun and interesting and very different from your typical just sort of freeze some orange juice. the other things, we talk about soups, gazpacho. We have, I think, 4 or 5 different recipes for different types of gazpachos, which is basically chilled soups.
Oh, I love gazpacho. It's my favorite. You know, we're here in Florida, and we have the most wonderful tomatoes this season. It's just, they are amazing, and I'm so thrilled with it, and I think gazpacho is one of the best things you can have.
So good, and so easy. Like, you know, you really, you don't have to be a chef to figure it out. It's very easy to make and do.
Now, yeah. You also recommend some spices are better at helping hydration?
Well, spices are just another way to say supplement. They're just very antique forms of very concentrated, you know, well-tested foods. So anytime you add, say, turmeric or cardamom or cinnamon, even poppy seeds, peppers, salts, all of these add to this level of nutrient and minerals in your water. So you're going to be charging that water with extra energy. So we love adding spices, herbs, same things. Herbs are time-tested foods that are, they're literally greens, but they've become herbs because they're used in almost every culinary tradition. They carry way more water than we think. Basil is 98% water. When you put basil in your gazpacho, you're now bringing in another level of hydration. And you add to that to the tomatoes, and maybe you're going to put watermelon in your gazpacho and have a gorgeous watermelon, cucumber, tomato, Oh, yum.
Oh, I know. I was listening, you know, I because it's Audible Book Month, I got the Audible version, and I'm listening to it, and at the same time, I'm just like running to the refrigerator. I need to start making a smoothie because, as I said, the recipes are great, and the ideas are wonderful, and I think it's so, you know, it seems so obvious, but nobody... As I said, because I lived in the Middle East, and I lived in a southern region where we really had very limited water. We brought in our water because we were at a site in the middle of nowhere, but we did have all of these vegetables, and we did have all of these fruits and that they'd bring to the local market, and among the spices was cardamom, and I love cardamom. It's funny, we don't. People in the United States really don't know about it, but once you put that in your food, it's an amazing taste.
Yeah, I love cardamom too. I actually just sort of suck on it during the day. I have a bag in my drawer right now, and just sort of, it's good for your breath. It's just I love cardamom too. Yeah, it's so easy. People think you have to be a cook or a chef to really play around with these things. And I follow a few recipes, and you'll be like an expert. You'll impress all your friends too.
Well, I have in the studio with me an author, Bonsu Brandvik, and so she's smiling when I'm talking about all of this because I'm going to take her out to lunch afterwards, and now we're going to want we're going to want some good style. We're going to look for a gazpacho place. So I just want to thank you. You know, I think I'm on a time limit here, right, with you? But I want to see. Let's go back through this in the. In your book, you have the 5-day sort of regime to get you hydrated. And then what happens afterwards? What should you sort of think about?
So we do lay out a couple of sort of, you know, rules that you should follow on a daily basis. So one of the rules is you should wake up and preload your water, drench your body first thing in the morning, 16 ounces if you can, maybe throw a little pinch of sea salt in there, a little squeeze of a lemon. That's one rule. The other rule is drink a glass of water before every meal. So there's lifelong rules to follow, and then you're going to find out what's going to work for you, whether it's a smoothie a day, whether it's two smoothies a day, how you can make that a part of your day if you're not eating enough salads, you know. So there's lots of infused waters. You could drink that instead of drinking if you don't like to drink water. But you have to sort of follow it to find out what's going to be what you feel you're best at. And it's not hard. This book was really written for everyone, from the elite athlete to, once again, the elderly person who can't get to water as easily as we can or is afraid to even get up to pee too many times because they're hurting, you know. So it's written for everybody. It's simple. It is, a lot of it is logical, except now there's research and it's fascinating research, and it really makes for a good read, and you'll understand it and hopefully put it to use better now that you know why.
And it really does help to beat fatigue, which is it's a major problem in this country, that people are just worn out. I mean, you hear this from so many people. You talk to them, how are you doing? I'm worn out. How are you? I'm exhausted. Yeah. And so to get this balance and to get the sort of the good water into you, and not have this guilt feeling that, you know, I have to drink just 5 straight, you know, or 8 bottles of bottled water a day. You've done a great job with this book.
Thank you. I do want to say that we are bodies of water. We literally are bodies of water. We don't think of ourselves that way, but by molecular count, we're 99% water. And bringing that to people's attention, just that alone, helps them rethink what that fluid intake is about in their life. And that's a great start, because water is our fuel.
Yeah.
And so I think the book is a real treasure for people who are looking for something to help them get over this fatigue and to drop weight, because because it does help you to sort of balance yourself, I think. And I just found it so fascinating that nobody else has really addressed this problem before.
The last book on hydration, the last sort of interesting book on hydration was probably written about 20 years ago. And, yeah, its time has come. And every single day there's some new research going on about this type of water.
People should go to your website. Tell us about your website.
Yeah. So mine is www.drdanacohen.com. And Gina's is?
Yes, I'm at the Hydration Foundation. I founded this website to get information to people on hydration tips. So hydrationfoundation.org.
That's an easy one to remember. And I went there and I thought, wow, this is really great. It really is very helpful. So I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today. And I highly recommend that everybody take an opportunity. This is the perfect season. We've got lots of fruits, vegetables out there. And keep in mind, the name of the book is Quench, Beat Fatigue, Drop Weight, and Heat. Heal Your Body Through the New Science of Optimum Hydration. And it's by Dr. Dana Cohen and cultural anthropologist Gina Bria. And isn't it fun when you come out with a great idea?
Thank you. It was not only fun. Yeah, it really was. It came to us.
Well, I think it's brilliant. And I want to thank you again for being on Joy on Paper today. Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now. Bye. Okay. Doesn't that sound good?
It does.
Are we headed for, are we going to go and have some gazpacho?
As I said, well, I was just thinking whenever you start talking about the vegetables and everything like that, I love fruits and vegetables. And I think that I could pretty much live on that. But I had never once thought about the hydration that I'm getting from them. I just happen to love the way they taste.
And it's right. And really, we are in the perfect place. We have right now, the tomatoes in this area are fantastic, and watermelon and all of this other stuff. And there are a lot of interesting smoothies in here and recipes for soups.
Well, that's the other part. I never realized that the hydration is different between just the water and the vegetables you take.
I didn't know that. I never heard of this gel water before. So it's fascinating, isn't it? But there's a logic to it, and you can understand. Now, you know, there is a fourth form of water. You know, in school we always learn water in three-fourths, and now we know that there's this gel water that we need in our bodies, and I think it's going to be great. And everybody, I want to thank Bansu so much for being here today and talking about her new book, Redemption, which is available wherever books are sold. And also go to Bansu's website, because
we had talked about just real briefly about the idea of please review the books when you like a book, please go on and review it, because people, it's wonderful that you enjoy it, and I love that when my fans send me emails and say how much they love the book
I don't know. They have 4 stars, I think, is maximum.
Five.
You can do 5 stars on Amazon, and you do that and give a nice review, because writers appreciate it. Because remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them on an audible book, or if you're really lucky, in a movie one day or a television series. And I think this would make a wonderful television miniseries. Bansu's stories are fantastic. So, do that, and meanwhile, again, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room, because he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him, and I love him because he's always so good to me. Bye-bye now. Bye.